Welcome to Pediatric Insight, where we have candid conversations with members of the Child Health Advisory Council and some of the nation's top academic child health leaders. I am Wesley Milliken, CEO of Career Physician, and your host. Each conversation addresses a leadership challenge or opportunity that's top of mind for today's pediatric leaders. The council breaks it down based on the wisdom and experience obtained throughout their distinguished careers. And now, I'm honored to turn it over to the moderator in today's conversation.
It's a pleasure to be with you today. My name is Dr. Danielle LaRocca-Arena, and I am a member of the Child Advisory Council of Career Physicians, where we have wonderful insight conversations that we hope are helpful to all of you. Today, we are discussing the topic of family and partner considerations during recruitment of academic faculty. What I'd like to do is, without going through lengthy review of the literature, I wanted to point out two things. One is that during this time, we will share with you some of the usual steps in the recruitment process and when it might be appropriate to consider family and partner considerations. But the other is just some background information taken from an article that actually looked at, from 2006 to 2007, at nearly 2,500 medical school faculty in 12 participating institutions. And this article is by Gerard et al. And they found that 73% roughly of faculty in medical schools are in dual career partnerships. I think most of us are probably not surprised by that in the 21st century, but it is important to note. And then of those partners, 41% are employed, but in non-academic positions, and 32% are actually partnered with an academic partner, which is where our conversation today begins in the considerations, which are not limited to obviously the partner, but the whole family consideration and the move of what we might be attuned to in recruiting faculty. There are some other statistics and I won't go into it, but what we'd like to do is to have our panelists really take a look at some of the aspects of recruiting faculty with the aim, of course, of retention. So we're very fortunate to have among us an incredible group of leaders who will add to the conversation. And today we have Bruder Stapleton, John Haynes, Valerie Opopari, Bruce Rubin, Arnie Strauss, Wesley Milliken. So let's begin in this conversation. And I'm looking forward to it because I'll probably add my two cents since I am also in a career with an academic partner who actually changed course on me midway. So I will begin with the following question for the panel. What is your general approach to family considerations when recruiting a medical school faculty? Are these considerations aligned with the various steps, timing in the recruitment process that you are familiar with? And I'd love to start with Dr. Valerie Opopari in her comments and ask Bruder Stapleton to also join in that conversation. So Valerie, switching to the familiar, Valerie.
Well, thank you for that question and for leading this conversation, because I feel very strongly that when you're recruiting anyone, you're recruiting not just the individual, you're recruiting all of the individual's family circumstances and interests, including sort of the kind of community that they want to be part of. So I think you have to have a very holistic view. The timing of it can vary. If you know a priori about several of your lead candidates that they're dual career individuals, then you can start pretty early in the process to think about how you're going to manage and support the dual recruitment. And many universities have programs and offices that will help with that. Along with that, I think it's really critical that you have very strong, you know, if you're a chair or a division chief, that you have very strong relationships with other leaders in the institution, whereby you have hopefully helped them with their dual recruitments, and that in turn, they would have an open ear to considering your candidacy. If that's the case, you have to start really early, because as we all know, to recruit anybody takes usually 9 months. Maybe Wesley wants to talk a little bit about this too. It's a long-term process to get through the review stages and the recruitment stages and finally land a candidate and get them all credentialed and in place. So the earlier you can start on these kind of conversations, albeit they have to be very, very, very confidential, because you certainly do not want to betray the confidences of your lead candidate, nor of the spouses who may or may not be interested in relocating after they get to a certain phase of the recruitment process. But I think as a philosophy, my philosophy has always been that the earlier that you are aware of the familial issues that will be important to a recruitment, you should get on them as soon as possible. And if you're not aware, I used to always use a question in my first interviews with candidates at the very end of their very first visit, when they're learning a little bit about the position, they're learning a little bit about me, the leadership of the institution, they're learning about the opportunities for them. At the end of that very first visit, I would always say, now, would you please let me know, if you can, are there any constraints or specific issues that will be really important for you as we go forward? And oftentimes candidates will volunteer information to you right away. And if they say, well, not really, then I always leave them with, well, you know, when we talk in a week after you get back and you've had a time to think about your first visit, can we plan to think about some of the issues that, again, upon reflection, might be really important to you? So kind of laying the seed. So those are kind of my philosophies and my perspectives on your first question.
Thank you. Bruder, love your thoughts.
Those are absolutely wonderful comments. I think this issue really brings up the importance for leaders to know their communities. And not just, as Valerie said, the medical school faculty and chairs, but also the broader university, because many dual working academic families may be in the law school or engineering, or knowing the community, the academic community, and also knowing your own community about the schools and the opportunities and businesses can be really important once you begin the conversations with the faculty. There are different opportunities. If most searches, especially for regular faculty appointments, are not done through a search firm. And there it's very important to, and I followed a very similar path to Valerie, is listening very carefully. And if they brought up something about a partner or spouse or children, I would follow up and say, would you mind if I ask you to expand on that? So it gave them the opportunity to do it. But if not, I would also say, are there issues that would potentially make it difficult for you to accept the job? And then they can say if they want. If one works with a search firm, the search firm has the opportunity to know that by talking with faculty. And so you're more aware often earlier. But I think it's really important. Early in my career as a chair, noticed that one of the pharmaceutical firms always had really outstanding representatives, more so than the others. And I had a chance to talk to one of the leaders of that pharma company and ask what kind of process. I always tried to learn from others. They impressed on me how important it was to understand the family issues. And that individual actually interviewed the spouse when they came to fully understand what the spouse's needs and or partner, it could be a partner too, of course, what the needs of the family were, so that they could be actively. And I think it's so important to recruit not only the individual that you're looking for who has the talent for the spot that you're looking for, but also to make this a good move for everyone.
I was trying to get as far into this as we could before I mentioned the word lawyers. I mean, it's an important thing that one should always check with their corporate counsel about these matters and with HR. But I think from a practical perspective, especially in today's times, I think getting to know the candidate at the onset of these processes, they really aren't candidates, they're applicants, right? And so I think the exploratory part of this with, I think getting to know the candidate's items of importance to them making a transition earlier in the process is really critical. You know, we've seen universities get all the way to the finalists before they really learn the needs of the family or the spouse. And you may be in a situation where there are no options, right? So you've invested all that time and energy into a candidate and there's no potential solution at your institution. And so I think just one that comes to mind, you know, we were recruiting a pediatric neurosurgeon, but her spouse was an adult pancreas transplant surgeon, right? And so, and it's a good point in that it was a quick, easy conversation with the institution to say, do you have a need for a pancreas transplant surgeon and a pediatric neurosurgeon at the same time? And my point there is, while a CV may look great and a committee may want to advance it to you as a leader, if there's not a solution for that problem, then out of respect for the candidate, right, you're wasting their time, you know, and the institutional resources if there's not a solution. So it's just something, you know, within the guidelines that we all live in. And candidates generally want you to know that information because it is important to them. And then I think from a process standpoint, Danielle, I think it also will give you some sense of where the candidate is in the process when you ask them if there are circumstances that you need to be aware of that will impact their ability to move, because it'll let you know how much conversation they've had as a family about a relocation, yeah. Right? And sometimes, well, if I like the role, then we'll talk about it. And you're probably going down a road that's not going to have a great ending if it's not a complete family conversation about a move.
Thank you for jumping in and alerting us to some of the legal and process issues. And in fact, I think both Valerie and Bruder were very careful in their wording of how they opened up the discussion, not specifically asking about a spouse or a partner. And I think both of you did that deliberately, but actually saying, are there other considerations? Which is a holistic and inclusive way of introducing it.
I'd like to build on what's been said, that you're recruiting an entire family and often bringing in and making the partner or the family feel comfortable early, as Valerie said, can make all the difference in a recruitment. We absolutely ban the use of the term trailing spouse. Nobody should ever use that term. It's pejorative. But unlike Bruder and Valerie, I'm a little bit more directive because I don't want to be opaque. Sometimes the candidates aren't aware of what you can and cannot ask. And so I will phrase it by saying, we are not permitted to directly ask you about partners or family or special interests. However, if this is important and you would like to bring it up, I am happy to address family interests, partner position. If they bring it up at that point, we'll often offer on the first visit, particularly for an academic appointment, would you like your partner to come along on this first visit and look at opportunities as well? That can save an awful lot of time. If they say, no, I'd like to have a look first, you honor that. If they would like the partner to come along, you then do your homework and also ask the partner to go onto the website online and see what opportunities might be available, particularly if they're not in the School of Medicine.
I think Wesley raised some really, really important points. You know, in particular, if you've got a search firm working with you and they know about the specifics of the spousal situation and they reach out and find there's not a position for the neurosurgeon dual career, you want to perhaps think about aborting that recruitment early in the process because, you know, these are all, you know, difficult recruiting from both the candidate and from the institution are huge investments in time and money and resources. So you don't want to go out on a limb when you know that there's not going to be a good academic or non-academic career opportunity for the spouse. But having said that, I just want to reiterate that sometimes things change. And all of a sudden, there wasn't that neurosurgery position 6 months ago when you were talking to your colleagues at the institution. And now all of a sudden there is. So one of the other really important points, which I think Bruce kind of alluded to, is the importance of really having an open and transparent and collegial interactions with individuals such that they leave the process or even come into the process feeling well-nurtured. But if you both mutually decide, look, because of your situation, we're really not going to be able to offer a great job to your wife at this time, but things change. And when you pick up that phone call and people have had a great relationship with you, 9 times out of 10, they'll want to get re-engaged. So again, another really important point, I think, in all this process is don't always give up because sometimes things can change. And the last thing I would say is you can have these confidential conversations without disclosing who the candidates are. You do not have to disclose the names of individuals. And, you know, these are inquiries you can make with your colleagues and just say, look, I've got a great couple and you would know this person. They're an outstanding neurosurgeon. And I think the institution would do well to have them here. But if you're not going to have an open position, could you let me know? Because I don't want to get too far ahead with these two great people unless there's really going to be a potential opportunity. So just a couple of caveats to build on the great comments from Wesley and Bruce.
Thanks. You know, it's so nice because as we discussed, it's obviously complicated to recruit a family because you influence the lives of so many individuals. Maybe I'll end there that we care about collaboration, academic hospital affiliations, and equal recruitment and respect for the process. So I think I'll pause there and really thank you. And for those who are listening in, please go to our website. We have a number of resources here and hope you will join us for the next conversation. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for today's discussion. The Child Health Advisory Council is comprised of a diverse group of emeritus deans, department chairs, division chiefs, and child health executives recognized for their leadership contributions in academic pediatrics and child health. The CHAC's impact is further bolstered by council specialty advisors who are active current national leaders in each of the subspecialties in pediatrics. Collectively, the 30 plus members of the CHAC bring unmatched wisdom and experience to career physicians' executive search and leadership development endeavors for its clients. If you have a question for our council, or have a future topic suggestion, please connect with us at pediatricinsight.com.